This is Mae Brussel at KZU, Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 554, and it's July the 19th, 1982. Before we begin the program, I have the usual disclaimer. I'm not used to that. I think KGO is the only station I mentioned before where I sign KBC, you sign when you come in. I'm responsible for everything I say, not this station or any other person. I'm totally responsible for any material that I put on the air, and I'll stand by it so that the station is not in jeopardy for the things that are heard on this particular program that I'm on. I don't know about the others. One little question I'm very interested in. I don't think it was a coincidence, and I think there's a lot more to it. We will hear more, or maybe we won't. Who was in the Queen's bedroom and what was she doing? Not from the standpoint of being a voyeur, but who was in there for 10 minutes? Why was he at the castle, at the residence of the Queen 12 different times? Why were all charges dropped? We don't have the answer, but I think the most strange part about it was that the Queen went to the hospital the next day to have a wisdom tooth removed. She had four children and didn't have to go to the hospital, but they took her to the hospital the next day. I bring that up because in the paper, The New Solidarity, June 28, 1982, there's a story about Roberto Calvi, the banker for the Italian bank that I've been talking about on the air for a few years, the one that was murdered in London, June the 18th. And this article links Calvi to the royal family in London and his fear that he would be killed in the city of London. Calvi had important contacts with the what he called the grandmother, the Masonic Lodge in London. And this article said members of the grandmother include the most important bankers in the city of London's financial district and top aristocrats. The grandmother is probably the most important single lodge of the Scottish Rite Freemasons headed by the British royal family and is believed to be the center of the central bankers network encompassing the Bank of England, the U.S. Federal Reserve, and so forth. Roberto Calvi disappeared from Italy exactly 1 week before his body was found. I'm reading from the article from New Solidarity. When he left Rome, he went to Venice, which is an important city, many important people that belong to that lodge, and the International Permandex Odessa Network, the Nazi network of the assassination teams that have been putting in military dictatorships since the end of World War II, before World War II, but escalating it since World War II, after Hitler and Mussolini were pushed off the stage for a while. Mussolini forever. This article says that Calvi went to Venice. He was accompanied by a person linked to the international drug trafficking. From Venice, he went to Vienna and then to Switzerland. There was a week where he was missing, and this was the same week that our President Ronald Reagan was over in London, you remember, and there was a lot of activity. He was returning from London. He had stayed at the castle. Roberto Calvi then went with a bag full of explosive documents to the grandmother before his arrival in London, and after his death, that bag of information that he had, that he picked up in Switzerland, was missing. During this period, banker Calvi said, "I am a member of the Grandmother Lodge of London because the P2 Grandmother Lodge, Lucio Gelli, who was again at Reagan's inauguration, who's down in Argentina, Lucio Gelli and Umberto Ortoliani persuaded me to join. If I had disobeyed those orders, I could not have done business with the city of London." And then he went on to say, "I received death threats. I don't want to end up dead." He had money in his pocket, $18,000, and was on the way to Brazil. Calvi became the most important victim of the Falklands War, this article said, and they said he was involved in financing the Argentine junta to the tune of 2 billion lire through the Banco Andino, A-N-D-I-N-O. So we'll do more on this story of the Queen and the visitor, because there are so many things happening around the world now that are important, that are linked to specifically to the past assassinations that I've studied, that I'm watching different pieces of the puzzle, and some of you won't get the connections because I've been doing this for many years, and some of you will follow. It'll be quite easy. And of course, I'm going right to the murder of the former chairman of Lockheed, but there are just two subjects I want to mention first. One is a letter I received from Congressman Leon Panetta. I mentioned on the program before that he was going to investigate through the Congressional Research Department, the Congressional Service for the Library of Congress, information about specific years of a man who works in the Pentagon or worked there until 1978 and was the plans officer and chief advisor to the top people in the Pentagon, Fritz Kramer, that I've talked about for so long. And Congressman Panetta asked, as a member of Congress, for a search on this particular person who's advising the Pentagon where he was from 1945 until 1947. And what he got back was a copy of the Washington Post article that I've shared with you on the air that came out in 1975, and also a copy of a New York Times article from 1979 about Fritz Kramer. Now, this is important because I understand that Henry Kissinger is going to be back jumping around the globe again, as he was before. His job will be escalating, and Fritz Kramer, of course, was the man behind Henry Kissinger. The New York Times article was February 19th, 1979, how Fritz Kramer, the enemy of publicity, shaped Henry Kissinger's thoughts and actions. Translated, it means Fritz Kramer won't let you see his face and won't be interviewed and won't come to any ceremonies of Henry Kissinger or parties or celebrations. Why is he hiding? And the other article was the Iron Mentor. That was the Washington Post article of the Pentagon, the Iron Mentor, who came over with his monocle from Mussolini's Italy and Hitler's Germany. And he is the advisor to Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig and still has a lot of influence. His protege is still jumping the globe and will affect more wars and more bloodshed. So the congressman from our area, Leon Panetta, really got a non-answer. They sent him a copy of an article that I gave to him in the first place when I asked him to look into the matter. The second thing I wanted to mention on the air, I did bring this up yesterday. We had a meeting here of various people in Pacific Grove, but the other listeners didn't get this. There's an article about George Seldes in the Washington Post, a very nice article. You saw him briefly, but probably didn't recognize him in the movie Reds. And this is from May 19th, 1982, George Seldes. A story of, it says, George Seldes, in fact, the muckraker's lifetime as a firebrand. And it tells about his newsletter from 1940 until 1950. It was called, in fact, and he's written many, many books. And Seldes wrote to me, I had sent some things to him last week, and he's 91 years old, and he answered within a day, and he wrote to me and said, what a coincidence that he was going through his files to look for my address because he had some messages to send to me. And one sentence in the letter that I think was important, he said, among the documents the U.S. Army captured at the end of World War II was a list of Hitler's friends and all the countries in the world of pro-Nazis that are in actual organizations. One report gave the number as 12 million people at the end of World War II. But he thought that maybe exaggerated, that the list was 6 million people. He says that's still a large number, and it is said to have included tens of thousands of Americans. He said that he understood that the Army officers finally destroyed the list, and there was an organization called World Service in which the Hitler regime published who their friends were all over the world, who they should do business with, what organizations were fronts for Nazi Germany or the continuation of Nazi Germany, and that the U.S. Army had this list. And instead of alerting us to this list, and he mentions the House Un-American Activity where they went for communists, they never went for Nazis and they never looked for them. The reason I bring this up so much on this program is that I sincerely believe that our inflation and unemployment and the pollution and the things that we're doing to each other and having done to us come from this kind of fascism. I'm not supporting communism, but I think the fascism of Hitler and Mussolini was horrendous, and I think for them to bring it over to this country when we're supposed to be fighting to protect something better than what they had, we incorporated them and destroyed the records of who they were so that they could continue their operations. Now, there was a non-news story. I call it a non-news because it's hardly, I haven't, except for one TV program, hardly in the newspapers I've gotten in the last few days, but a very, very important story. Ex-Lockheed chief, wife, and maid slain. The retired board chairman of Lockheed Aircraft was shot to death last week, along with his wife and along with a housekeeper. They lived in the Mainline Mansion section of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. His name is Cortland Gross. His brother founded Lockheed Aircraft in 1932. Those were the years where Charles Lindbergh was working with Goering and had moved over to England and wanted to move into Germany in the late 30s. Lindbergh moved over there in the late 30s, but around 1932, he was working as well as Howard Hughes was with what started as Lockheed Aircraft, with American Aircraft. And Robert Gross, his brother, had founded Lockheed, and this Cortland Gross had been the director of Lockheed for quite a few years. He was their chairman from 1961 to 1967. Now, that time period, 61, is the time period where Richard Nixon lost the election to John Kennedy, and John Kennedy had become the president, and Lockheed, persons from Lockheed, were very much involved in the assassination of John Kennedy, and also the Lockheed figures are very instrumental in running the career of Richard Nixon through the House of Representatives, through the Senate, as vice president, and want him to be the president in 1960. Mr. Cortland and his wife, his name is Alexandra, Alexandra von Rett, R-E-N-S-S-E-L-A-E-R, Rensselaer Wanamaker Gross. She had originally married one of the Wanamakers. They were murdered along with their housekeeper, Catherine van der Veer, and they lived directly behind the home located of Dr. Richard A. Davis, the brother of the First Lady Nancy Reagan, who has a home, Dr. Davis has his home, right behind the former director of Lockheed and the brother of the man who founded Lockheed Aircraft. And these two people and their maid were murdered this last week. Now, if you want a sample of Lockheed and the interlocking agency and the way it touches various conspiracies, I could give you about 100 hours on Lockheed. But I'll just give you a couple of quick paragraphs as a summary that Jim Hogan did in the book Spooks. There's a chapter called Caviar's Locus, and he describes the Lockheed Corporation and how a Mr. Daniel Houghton went to Washington to testify about problems that Lockheed was having in breaking laws in the United States. And they referred to Lockheed Corporation's chairman as he testified on some of the problems of the Subcommittee on Multinational Corporations. And this book describes how they masterminded and raped the treasures of a dozen nations, how Lockheed corrupted the political processes of both hemispheres, how they jeopardized national security, how they screwed the taxpayer, how they destabled the governments of three allies, undermined NATO, and undermining NATO goes along with Licio Gelli and the Alexander Haig connections and the Nazi connections from Italy and Germany, how they subverted the marketplace, how they boosted inflation, how they stimulated suicides as far apart as Tokyo and L.A. And Jim Hogan in this chapter says that to study, for the subcommittee to study Lockheed, would be to study a pattern of bribery and intrigue that would go on continuously. They said it was a who's who of an offstage cast of geographically immune characters that seemed to have slunk from the pages of pulp fiction. In the case of Lockheed Corporation alone, the missing principals included a Dutch prince, a French pilot, a defrocked Spanish priest on the Hong Kong Tokyo currency drug market run, various heroes of the European resistance, the architect of Pearl Harbor, a survivor of Nazi medical experiments, former Manchurian spies, pro-fascist samurai with bags of industrial diamonds, and ties to the Ginza mob and the Reverend Mooney, the Moonies. The Lockheed Corporation brought over Reverend Moon in through Atlanta, Georgia, with many tentacles to the Defense Department. And it says, not to mention an assortment of Ivy League bagmen, Swiss gnomes, Arab sheiks, third world generals linked invisibly one into another, numbered accounts, conduits, and dummy core. Now, that's just one little explanation of Lockheed. So sometimes if you think on the program we jump around, Lockheed is a very complicated corporation that touches the tentacles of many areas that I've been talking about on the air for the past 11 years. In this same chapter, it describes a man described as a Catholic priest who was a bagman in Hong Kong for the exchange, and he dealt with another person, a former OSS operative who was linked to the CIA, and the way monies traveled from Hong Kong to Japan. And the Lockheed was only one of the Lockheed's Chinese Laundry. This mob, the priest worked for the Lockheed's Chinese Laundry, while Deke and Company served as middlemen in transfers amounting from $8,300,000 between 1969 and 75 to $4,300,000 later. This whole book Spooks is a good analysis of all the major corporations that are involved in the assassinations, in the gambling syndicate, the disguising of priests, the popes, the churches like Reverend Moon, and so forth. This chapter also on the Caviar's Locus goes into President Nixon and Henry Kissinger again, and Prime Minister Tanaka, that's Richard Allen's friend, and a lot of money transferred back and forth. So when a man of the stature of the chairman of Lockheed gets murdered, and also with the silence that accompanied it, it's very strange. Now, the same week, the same day that this family was murdered, he and his wife, Reverend Moon, got an 18-month prison term. July 17th, 1982, the Reverend Sun Young Moon sat impassively while he was told he would have to go to jail because of certain tax problems and the swindling and the disruption of the money flow that involved a lot of money. They limited to concealing $150,000 income from a $1.6 million bank account. But there were a lot of questions into Reverend Moon's money. The case centered on this one particular thing. So the very day that Reverend Moon is told that he has to go to jail because the judge wants to show that the rich go off, the former chairman of Lockheed, who was involved with those years of Reverend Moon, was murdered. In the book Spooks, it tells about the use of Sun Young Moon, Reverend Sun Young Moon, and Mr. Kodamo, and Lockheed Aircraft, and Moon was the recipient of untold Lockheed millions. Kodamo's with the aircraft firm in Japan and Korea. And this book tells about the specter of Lockheed Corporation subsidizing the Moonies. It went from Seoul to Savannah, Georgia, by means of bribes, laundered through Hong Kong by a man disguised as a Spanish missionary, and he had a so-called Beacons box, the delivery truck in California. There's a Beacons. I don't know if they're national, but certainly in California. And the priest, his name was Jose Guardiano, but they used a Beacons box and transported millions of dollars to set up Reverend Moon. Remember how Lockheed wanted Richard Nixon to be president, and when he was in the hot water at the time of Watergate for all the various crimes that were becoming unglued, in came Reverend Moon with his big rallies to support Richard Nixon, funded by Lockheed, who gave Moon the money to get in. Now, the same week that the chairman of Lockheed and the brother of the man who founded it was murdered, there was a speaker on the Monterey Peninsula here, and he was talking about the U-2 planes. His name is Ben Rich, Vice President for Advanced Development Projects at Lockheed, California. And our Monterey Herald had an article, Lockheed speaker here, talking about the U-2 plane for the Soviet Union, the flight of the U-2 over the Soviet Union when Lee Harvey Oswald was stationed there, and how the Russians couldn't possibly have seen the U-2. It was too high up, and President Eisenhower had what he called the open sky proposal that was later rejected by the Russians. But this is an article about the Lockheed making the U-2, and I've mentioned many times the links of Oswald and his role at the Minsk radio factory and the way the U-2 was down to break up any possible peace agreement or talks between President Eisenhower and Khrushchev. Well, the same day, it was June the 15th, a man was here on the Monterey Peninsula talking about the U-2s and Lockheed. And July the 5th, this was broadcast 552, this was 3 weeks ago, I was quoting the Jack Anderson article that was in our Monterey Herald called Renegades Ace Hole. And Jack Anderson was saying that the reason Edwin Wilson would get off with a slap on the wrist, there were many reasons, not only that he worked for the CIA, but in spite of the fact that he was arming Gaddafi and Idi Amin and the terrorists and sending equipment illegally overseas, and also it went to other countries besides those two, the Jack Anderson article said that one reason he would get off was because of Gary Powers and the U-2 flight, that Edwin Wilson was involved in the U-2 flight. Well, the point I'm trying to make again is here is the death of a man very active in the Lockheed Corporation chairman through all those years that I'm talking about. The week that he dies, Edwin Wilson comes home. Edwin Wilson worked for the Lockheed U-2 CIA combined. There are people discussing the U-2, lecturing about the Lockheed up here at Monterey Peninsula. And this chairman of Lockheed, whose brother founded, is murdered in Philadelphia and lives behind Nancy Reagan. I'm going to get to that in a little while. Now, the Wall Street Journal had an article about Lockheed this week. Lockheed is more than those few sentences I read from Jim Hogan's book. If you wanted to take two organizations that would describe what I have researched and called the Nazification of America, taking over the day World War II was over 2 years before 1943, up to the present day and into tomorrow's future. If you read the paper this morning, what Weinberger was saying, and I don't want to digress on that tonight, although it upset me terribly this morning. If you take what they're doing, if you take the Howard Hughes organization and Lockheed, it was the Nazification of America. This was the real heart of the tentacles of getting control of the country. And the way you get control is to kill the people that are in your way so that your particular puppets do exactly what you want. So that when Richard Nixon, who was their trained agent since World War II, didn't win, they killed John Kennedy. And I'll go into the links of Lockheed to John Kennedy, then Lockheed to Robert Kennedy, and maybe in this hour you'll get the point. Right now, I just want to say Wall Street Journal had the Saudi agent wins arbitration from Lockheed. That's Mr. Adnan Khashoggi, the famous Saudi Arabian person who just won a permission for undisclosed payments. He's a multi-millionaire, but he's going to get undisclosed payments from Lockheed. Previously, the Wall Street Journal said they were held up because they weren't sure of the legality of the permissibility of getting payments under United States and Saudi Arabian laws. But believe me, the courts won with Khashoggi, and this is in Burbank, and he's to be paid the money from Lockheed. Another article about Khashoggi when he was in court, his wife was divorcing him, and that process is still going on, I guess. I didn't hear the settlement of it. This was a December 1981 article. The attorney for Mr. Khashoggi from Lockheed and Saudi Arabia is Joseph Ball from the Warren Commission. He also was the attorney for John Ehrlichman at the time of the Watergate break-ins, and he's also the attorney in the office of the father, Jerry Brown, in Beverly Hills, California. Now, a business partner of Mr. Khashoggi, who works for Lockheed and Saudi Arabia, was William Holden. The plot gets a little thicker. William Holden was very busy with Khashoggi. He originally owned the Mount Kenya Safari Club in Africa, and many of these safari clubs were set up as spy organizations by the Broder Band in South Africa. This was in Kenya. He was a friend of Khashoggi's. He did business with him. William Holden kept his banking in Switzerland. He was an international traveler that went down to New Guinea and Hong Kong and Japan. And when he wasn't making movies, he said that was his second job, sort of like the Pope and the President. Acting was his second job. He was an international traveler, an international banker, who sold his Kenya establishment to Khashoggi and had the Mount Kenya Safari Club. And William Holden had an early demise this winter when a lot of the pieces of the puzzle were getting unglued. Again, just in the book Spooks, it's a marvelous reference book on Lockheed. It describes for years Lockheed's secret agent in the Middle East was Mr. Khashoggi, a sophisticated man whose time is divided between royal palaces and Paradise Island and so forth. He travels all over. He was the former president's personal envoy to King Faisal during the 1973 oil embargo. And it describes his activities. His corporate fronts are in Beirut, Lebanon, Liechtenstein, Geneva, and many more places. And he's paid more than $100 million by the Lockheed Corporation alone. He has other clients in the Sudan, in Paris. He's the ultimate spook. That's Mr. Khashoggi, the business partner of William Holden before he died. Now, this last November, William Holden bled to death, according to the coroner's report. The place was meticulous. There was still empty liquor around. I still want to do 1 hour on the William Holden, Natalie Wood. I keep promising I will get to it. But Holden died in November 1981. He was about to marry somebody and take a trip to the Sudan and to Rome, where his daughter lives, and take that new Trans-Siberia Railway, that car. But he was a business partner of Holden was a partner of Khashoggi. Khashoggi makes hundreds of millions from Lockheed. And William Holden was the best man at Nancy Reagan's wedding, Nancy Davis's wedding. And don't forget, Nancy's brother lives behind the house back to back to the head of Lockheed, who was just murdered. So we have the Khashoggi working for Lockheed. We have William Holden, best man at the wedding. We have the links of Khashoggi to Saudi Arabia, international organizations all over the world. William Holden, the same thing with his Swiss bank accounts and his links, close links to Nancy and Ronald, and the Lockheed connections to Khashoggi, and the Lockheed family, the Gross family, living back to back in behind Nancy. Now, is that important by itself? It isn't important by itself, except in the context that it's coming down at the present time. There are so many interrelated facts about the Lockheed Corporation, as I say, into the John Kennedy assassination. George de Morenchild, Lee Harvey Oswald's closest friend. His daughter married the vice president of Lockheed, and he testified about that. George de Morenchild's wife came into this country through the help of the Howard Hughes Organization and the Raymer Wooldridge and North American Aircraft, and also through Howard Hughes when he worked with Lockheed. In Volume 9 of the Warren Commission hearings, page 290, Mrs. de Morenchild described how her brother came to this country through North American Aircraft, through Raymer Wooldridge, before that with Howard Hughes, and then he worked at the University of Chicago. That's where George Shultz came from, and we don't know what capacity. It's a huge university, but Mrs. de Morenchild worked with the intelligence community, as did her husband, and they worked for that aircraft. Also, George de Morenchild testified on page 206, his daughter was married to Ragnar Curtin. Ragnar Curtin's father is vice president of Lockheed Aircraft. He's a well-established fellow, went to the London School of Economics and so forth. We're talking about Lee Harvey Oswald's closest friend, the couple that provide them with their transportation, their jobs, and their housing. And also in the House Select Committee on Assassinations, there, page 59 of the, I think it's volume 7, I didn't make a note of it here, George de Morenchild was being discussed. He's the fellow that was supposed to have shot himself in the mouth and committed suicide when the House Select Committee was to interview him that same day. But they got enough information about him, about his links to a person like Pedro Diaz-Lance, a former test pilot for Lockheed and Pan Am, and the links of de Morenchild to the military and the Lockheed. So there were many, many Lockheed connections to the Kennedy assassination. That's just one of them. So very timely when a lot of the pieces of the Permandex funding for the murder are coming out because of the Roberta Calvi murder and the missing money in Europe and because of Licio Gelli in Argentina, the Permandex organization is being exposed, and a very important person and his wife were murdered this last week with not as very much in the newspapers, hardly a little bit to follow it up. And then, of course, in the Robert Kennedy assassination, many of you know the name Thane Caesar, and some of you don't. In the book on the assassination of Robert Kennedy by William Turner and John Christian, they go into the second gun controversy, and I've done a lot of that with you on broadcast. And for those of you that don't have that information, I can do more at a later time. But the security guard that shot Robert Kennedy from the back of the head was Thane Caesar, employed at Lockheed Aircraft in Burbank. At nighttime, he was sent out by the Ace Guard Service. The autopsy at Robert Kennedy's, when they did the autopsy, was a bullet wound at the back of the head, powder burns at the back, where Thane Caesar was standing. We'll take a break now because it's the end of the half hour, and we'll do some more about Lockheed, Nancy Reagan, Alfred Bloomingdale, and some interlocking relationships in that Philadelphia area. This is Mae Brussel at KAZU-FM. We're asking you to please support the station. It is...